How's it going and welcome to episode 48 of On The Wire, proud member of the Pitcherless Podcast Network. Follow the pod on the Twitter at On The Wire Pod. And of course, if you're listening on a platform that allows ratings and reviews, please take a second to let us know what you think. I am Adam Howe. You can follow me on the Twitter at 80grade. That's all spelled out. And I am once again joined by Kevin Hastings, who should be followed on the Twitter himself at Hastings Kevin. And I'm happy to see you. You made it through the storm, Kevin, and you made it back to us in one piece.
Yeah, I am as well. It wasn't even storming. It was just a really windy day like we get out here in West Texas, and it was wreaking havoc on the internet here last week. But yeah, definitely glad to be back. We got Raz Slam going. We got all kinds of things going on.
I don't know if going is the right word for wrestling. At least I'm not in one of those leagues. Sorry to my league mates for shouting that out. Yeah, we were having a discussion in the Pitcherless Discord and the staff channel about where everybody was at. And people were like, oh, I'm in the third round already. Here's how I started my draft, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, oh, that's nice. I haven't picked yet. It's the first round. We're still waiting for pick five. We sped up, but it varies based on what league you're in, for sure.
Here we are. It started about 10 hours ago, and we are towards the end of round five in my league.
Whoa. Okay. Lucky you. Yeah, we are recording this on Tuesday, 2/22/22, the magic day, and this obviously will come out later on in the week on Sunday. So hopefully I'm in round five by then.
Oh, by then. Absolutely.
Yeah. By the time you're listening to this, hopefully I've made five picks. All right, well, let's get right into it. Last week, we were joined, or I was joined, by Dave Mendelson talking about some streaming hitters. So it's only natural that we move into streaming pitchers this week. And luckily, we have one of the best in the subject, and that's Michael Simeone joining us. Of course, Michael should be followed on the Twitter as his well-known handle, at SP Streamer. And of course, is the founder of SPStreamer.com. You should be checking that out on all of his work. You can also hear Michael alongside former guest of the show, Lauren Auerbach, on the official SP Streamer podcast. We're going to spend some time picking Michael's brain regarding the area he's probably best known for, and that's picking pitchers to stream in season. First, Michael, just happy to have you here, man. Thanks for joining us.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. Thanks for having me on, guys.
Yeah, like I said, we're going to talk a lot about streaming pitchers, what you're looking for in season, what kind of stands out for a reason to pick up a guy, whether you're a 12-teamer, 15-teamer, what have you. Obviously, the type of pitchers vary based on what's available on the wire and your league size. But for now, we're going to go right into our first section, our moving target section. Of course, this is a section where we talk about some players that we might be eyeing in the very end of our FAB leagues, which a lot of people are starting to make the transition into as February kind of rolls along and we get a little bit closer to heavy drafting March season. And this could be 12-team or 15-team or what have you. But typical 30-round draft where you're using rounds 28, 29, 30 on, and as you're eyeing different builds for your team, whether you're throwing a dart at a possible closer, at a free agent who hasn't found a home yet, a prospect, a lot of different ways that you can go with this. And so, Kevin, since it's been a while, I'm going to let you lead it off. Who are you eyeing? If you were in a draft right now in, last couple of rounds of Fab League, which would be no surprise if you weren't, or if you were, who might you be eyeing here?
I thought I'd play right into our subject this week, and with Michael being our guest, and I have brought up a couple of times this offseason, 12 teams have a four-game week that first weekend of the season. As of right now, as currently scheduled, four teams play four games that week, or 12, excuse me. I went and looked at who is right now they're the number four starters on those teams and which ones might be available to get an extra start that week for our fantasy teams. A few of them we're not going to get. Clevinger's listed as a number four. Logan Gilbert's listed as a number four. We're not going to get those guys, but there are several that'll be available. I looked up the past month of online championships. That way I'm looking at 12 team leagues drafted over the past month. What we're looking at here, Austin Gomber, he'll be at the Dodgers. Don't know if I like that one. A couple of that I do. These two guys have not been drafted at all in an online championship yet. Matt Manning is listed as the number. He's pitching at Seattle. Yeah. We think Seattle's going to have a pretty good lineup this coming season, but it's a nice ballpark. He's going to be there. Michael Lorenzen is listed as the number four pitching at Oakland, another good pitcher's ballpark. So there's another possibility.
And who knows what that lineup looks like come right, opening day.
Absolutely. Cole Irvin against the Angels. We're expecting the Angels to be much better with healthy Mike Trout and Anthony Rendon, but it's a possibility. I think especially, I am cautiously optimistic that we're going to have opening day on March 31st, but we're going to have a shortened spring training. And we saw this in 2020. Pitchers will be ahead. Not as far as going deep into games, but as far as individual matchups. So I'd be willing to throw any of these guys out there depending on the league and format I'm in.
Yeah, I know I have a couple shares of Matt Manning and a couple of the DCs and the draft and holds that I've drafted. I like your idea of the matchup thing. Manning would be difficult for me to start right away. I want to know how he's developed with his new catcher up in Detroit and see what kind of flow he can get into. Obviously, he has a pedigree. He was lights out for many years in the minors. Could not translate that into when he made it up to Detroit. So I'm going to have a hard time starting him in week one, but I wouldn't have a problem stashing him for 1 or 2 weeks and seeing how he's going to adjust to the new season, possibly the new ball, the new battery mate, and we'll see how that works out.
Yeah, the problem with Manning is those blow-ups. Like, he gets really blown up. So I'd be a little scared to throw him out there right away as well, especially because at least last season, didn't look like there was any real strikeout potential. And I want to see what he does first before I'm even willing to throw him out in a start against any team.
Yeah, I've got him in two different dynasty leagues, and I'm obviously holding him in that type of format, if nothing else, just because of the pedigree and what he's shown. But mm-hmm. I'm going to have a hard time starting him maybe even in April, maybe toward the end of April, if he's really hit the ground running and he's shown some strides. But that first start, especially like you mentioned, that lineup in Seattle is going to be much better regardless of the ballpark. And I wouldn't want to take that hit right in the first week of the season. But nice little stash if he does make it out of week one or the first start kicking. Michael, as the guest, let's go ahead and, because especially since you left the section blank on my rundown, I'm very curious to see who you're going to go.
Sorry. Because you know what? A lot of people like will do that. And then I don't know if I'm actually supposed to fill it out. I don't know. So I literally just copy and paste it into my own doc sheet and put my stuff in there. I guess it leaves a little mystery for you.
Yeah, exactly.
You
know? So, I like it.
It makes things a little fun. Do you want me to go like one now, or you want me to just say all three?
You got three?
I picked three, yeah.
All right, why don't you go with one, and I'll throw out one, and then you can have your
own. All right. So I went opposite. I know you mentioned prospects and stuff, but I went old and boring, and I went with Madison Bumgarner. He's going to be available that late in drafts. Believe it or not, he's probably going to be their SP1. But I think what's enticing about him is, one, he's going to get you innings. And they got the new pitching coach from the Astros. So who knows, maybe they can unlock something with him. The four seam actually wasn't too horrendous last year. And I think maybe if they could figure out a different pitch mix for him or something, maybe we could get just a decent Bumgarner. Like, even if he's a low four ERA, but gets you like 170, 180 innings, that would be great. I would take that all day. So I feel like as a last pick in a fab league, I wouldn't mind taking him. This way I have someone who has potential and could potentially get me a ton of innings throughout the year.
Yeah, obviously the big news, Brett Strom going over to Arizona from Houston. I'm curious to see, I don't know his history on working with veterans. And I wonder if a lot of his success has been with the younger guys.
I think, was Morton older when he got there? I think he was, right?
I feel like Morton's always been older.
You're probably right.
Yeah, but hey, that's fair. Yeah, that's fair as well. And obviously Cole coming over as well.
Yeah.
He wasn't like super young, but in his 20s, whatnot. So I'll be curious to see, like, Bumgarner, just, I don't know him at all as a person, but I definitely get a sense that he's stubborn. He's just, I am who I am. I know how to deal with, and I'm not saying he's not open to it, but that would be my narrative in my head going into it, whether or not. Now, almost everybody else in that rotation in Arizona, super excited about. I have Caleb, he's on the rotation technically.
Caleb Smith.
Caleb Smith is usually my go-to like round 45 pick in all my DCs and my draft and hold. I'm excited for that situation to play itself out and see what we can say. Obviously, everybody's excited about Zach Allen, but I will be very interested to see, because I do have a couple shares of Bumgarner as well in those formats.
Luke Weaver too.
you're going to know, but he's the opposite of Manning, right? You're going to know Bumgarner right off the bat. You're going to see how fast he's throwing, what his repertoire is, and what he's mm-hmm. going with right from the gate. And you're going to feel comfortable with it because he's Madison Bumgarner. It's like, all right, if I'm willing to, you know, if I'm willing to throw him out there, willing to draft him, I'm going to start him right away. And then I'm going to, you know, eat it, or I'm going to hold on to him for a little bit longer. So I like that call out. All right. I'm going to go with non-pitchers here for this one. So I figured we will be it's opposite of you, Kevin. I figured we were going to talk enough about pitchers here. I'm going to go with a couple of Yoshi Tsugo. I feel like he has been talked about. This is not going under the radar, but he is still mm-hmm. going in February drafts across NFBC. So this is all different formats mixed together. Throw that out there. He's going 366, I believe, or 367, 367 on average. When he started with Pittsburgh last year in the middle of August through the end of the year, he played pretty much every single day between first base and right field, a couple of pinch hits, but for the most part, he played pretty much every single day batting second in throughout most of the month of September. I think everybody expects him to start at first base for the Pirates, whether you're looking at roster resource or just anybody's Twitter feed. He hit 268 average through 144 plate appearances, which 134 WRC plus. So I do believe he is either at the very least comfortable where he's at, going to be given the opportunity to play almost every single day. And with the dual first base and outfield eligibility, he fills different holes depending on what you've built throughout the draft. Now, if you're in a 15 teamer, you're going to have to stretch a little bit earlier than your 30th round pick. If you're in a main event qualifier, or even a main event, he's going to jump up a little bit more. Outfield thins out real quick. And most of the time, he is going to be probably your fifth outfielder or possibly your reserve roster spots. But I do believe that this is somebody who can fill in multiple holes based on what you've built throughout the course of your draft. And I'm going to throw out my second one, and then, Mike, I'll let you finish off with your Mike Moustakas, also boring and old, right? I don't mind going that route here. We talked a little bit about him last week with Amendi, and just the fact that he's one who I like to target guys who probably played through and didn't play through injury for a lot of last year. And his stock is extremely low right now because of the fact. But overall, Mike Moustakas has been pretty reliable.
And please just career. Lock him into everyday designated hitter.
Yes.
Do not put him in the field.
Yeah. But that is the beauty. He's still third base eligible. Everybody and their cousin has talked about how much they despised third base this year. So I'm not going into any more detail on that. But he's a perfect reserve spot for the third base eligibility if he is able to lock down that. Now, the Reds have a lot of options that they can move in and out of designated hitter once that becomes official in the National League. But if he has to go out there and fill in at third base or even second base, and he obviously was playing that for a while, or even first base, like just the spell Votto, and Votto's getting up there as well. I'm not saying he's going to get triple eligibility. I just want him to, exactly, Kevin, like you just said, I just want to see him getting every single day plate appearances. And this is another situation I don't mind throwing a late round pick in, knowing that I'm going to know at the beginning of the year where he's at. So if I draft right now, I can take that risk and then fab him. If it turns out he's still not healthy or he hasn't gotten over everything, he has a really poor spring training or gets re-injured, I got no problem putting it. But if he does have a strong spring training and he does show that he's passed all that, all the injury riddled 2021, that this is going to be a big jump. This is going to be a guy that I'm going to keep on my roster for a long time, especially if he does move into that designated hitter spot. I convinced you guys so well that I've got no retort. I appreciate that.
I was going to say, you covered everything. I didn't know what else to say. Yeah.
Yeah, I agree with everything on both of those guys. I think it was, when I was hanging out on Dugout Study Hall, we brought up Tsugo, and at that time, his ADP was still at 450. He's jumped almost 100 spots since November, but yeah, it's still worth the pick at that spot in my mind.
Yeah, I got Tsugo exactly like you said, or in my early DCs November or maybe even early December in the 400 range. But then all of a sudden, like two drafts later, I'm not able to wait any longer because he's just, so I missed out on him for two drafts, and then I had to adjust mm-hmm. and get him a couple other places. But All right, Michael, you got two more on your mystery list. Let's hear them.
One of them I just realized hasn't even been drafted in OCs in the past month, basically, or this month at least. And that's Willie Calhoun. Right now, I don't know how true this will be, and I'm sure they're going to add more people. But right now they have him hitting leadoff, apparently, according to Roster Resource. So he'll be hitting in front of Semien and Seager. And I just think people, I know he has had a lot of injuries and some injury risk, but I think people forget how good he was when he was healthy. In 2019, he had 21 home runs and 337 plate appearances with a 110 WRC plus, a 351 wOBA. So I just think he has the skill set to do it as long as he's healthy. And if he is hitting at the top of that lineup, I think he'd give you a lot of value, and he's somewhat of a decent ad late in drafts. And then my other one is Patrick Corbin. I tweeted something out about him the other day about just how good his slider still was last year. Obviously it's ridiculous. And I know that's the thing, is that everyone says you need more than one pitch, but towards the end of the year, his fastball actually really went up in terms of velocity. So I feel like if that sticks, then maybe he could perhaps take a step forward again next season. And plus, he started throwing his slider even more towards the 40% range, which we wanted to see towards the end of last season as well. So I felt like he was going the right direction that you want him to go to finish off the year last year. And perhaps if that carries over, then I don't think we're going to see the Patrick Corbin of old, but maybe we get a good year out of him where he is like well worth his ADP and you really profit off taking him.
Yeah, I think it was a running joke in the Pitcherless Discord in September or even late August. It's like, friends don't let friends stream Patrick Corbin. Yeah. Just because he tricked you like that, at least that. I'm trying to find his game log. He had two games in early September. We went seven strong. He went seven, and for the most part, they were strong. They were quality starts. And of course, he gets blown up on the 18th for six earned runs in four innings. And of course, in most head-to-head leagues, that's the middle of your playoffs, if not your championship week. So that kills you, and it obviously leaves a bad taste in your mouth when you're drafting this year, and it's showing in his ADP for sure. I would be curious to know how good he's a spring training. The things that you look for in spring training, you look for the walks, you look for the velocity, and as Nick Pollock always says, you look what he's sitting at, not what he's hitting. And you obviously want to see that he's hitting and he's sitting where he was last September, as you mentioned, the fastball up quite a few ticks, and it was interesting.
It's back towards 93, I think, 93 right. miles an hour, yeah.
Which we didn't really see all season up until that point. Yeah, Willie Calhoun I thought was a really good call out, just because of all the stuff that we keep hearing about. And of course, you know, Jeff Zimmerman's banging the drum on getting as many plate appearances as you can. If you can find a leadoff hitter at the end of your draft, whether or not, I'm not convinced he keeps the leadoff spot.
I don't think so either.
Day, but there's he has his foot in the door at the very least.
Mm-hmm.
All right, these are some really good callouts that we all made. Keep an eye. Again, I'm going to echo what I said earlier. It really makes a difference on how you've built your team, how you've drafted through the first 25 rounds, and how you want to use those last five picks. And you can go in a lot of different directions. So these are some names that, based on what you've built, you might want to keep an eye on. And these names will change come March after spring training is going on, and we have more. Like, we might have absolutely no interest in drafting Mike Moustakas because there's no upside, because we know he's still hurt or what have you, or he doesn't have a role or whatever it is. So keep an eye on those things. But now it's time to talk about the art of streaming pitchers throughout the season. You know, what we're looking for, what situations to target, and what to hold back. But before we do that, we're going to take this quick break.
Hey, Alex Fast here, and thanks for listening to this podcast on the Pitcher List Podcast Network. If you're a fan, consider supporting all of us by getting a PL Plus subscription, where you're going to get an ad-free website and get access to our Discord, where you can talk to all of our podcast hosts and staff. Plus, you can hang out with our incredible Pitcher List community. It's basically a baseball sanctuary year-round for as low as $8 a month. You can sign up at pitcherlist.com/plus, and you're going to get your first month free with promo code podcast. Also, don't forget to check out everything else we do as well, from YouTube videos, live streams, newsletters, off-season articles, TikToks, breakdowns, over 15 baseball podcasts on our network. We can't stop talking about baseball, even during the off-season. So sign up for PL Plus today at pitcherlist.com/plus and use promo code podcast to get your first month free. All right, thanks for listening. Let's get back to the show.
All right. And as I mentioned, we are going to talk about streaming pitchers. We talked about streaming hitters last week with David Mendelsohn. And of course, we've got Michael Simeon, SP streamer himself, to talk a little bit about, a lot about streaming pitchers in season, whether you're in a 12-teamer, 15-teamer. So first and foremost, Michael, we are a FAB-oriented podcast. Throughout the course of the season, we make recommendations on who you should be picking up, whether it's for pitchers, hitters, categories, what have you. So let me ask you, in general, what is your personal overall FAB strategy? Typically, do you target certain positions? Do you spend all your time streaming different either pitchers or hitters, or any other kind of ideas of how you utilize your FAB throughout the course of the season?
Yeah, in terms of spending, I don't like to be the one who spends a ton of money. I try and keep it to, I don't want to go to triple digits. I'll put it that way. I'm pretty conservative, basically. But I'm going to go against my entire brand here. And I actually try to really good. Obviously, injuries happen, so it doesn't always work out and you need to do what you got to do, but I actually try and build a really good rotation, and I actually prefer to stream hitters for my teams. So I tend to really target that because I feel like it's easier to add hitters weekly and get counting stats that you need, as opposed to pitching where you could get blown up in two categories easily and basically lose out on the whole week based on one outing. And I know that's actually becoming popular within the high stakes industry, where a lot of people are leaning more towards streaming hitting, and it makes a lot of sense. I basically actually got into what I do because I'm in a points league, and that's completely different, where you basically have to stream pitchers to win weeks because you get so many more points with pitching compared to hitting. But in real typical FAB leagues, I'm actually really targeting hitters more so than pitchers. Obviously, if I do have to stream pitching, I will. When you're looking at two-star pitchers compared to one-star pitchers, I'd much rather take a good matchup with a one-star pitcher than a two-star pitcher, in my opinion. And yeah, and that's really it. Again, everything. The problem with FAB is it's so hard to talk about because it's so situational based on your team. So like, it really depends on what's happening with my team at the time. But coming out of a draft, I'm hoping that my rotation is good enough where I don't really have to stream that much.
Yeah, I think it does make a lot of sense to stream hitters throughout the course of the season, if for no other reason, budgetary reasons, because you can typically, even in a 15 teamer, and we talk about it every week in season, like the waterfall bids are extremely important. And if you can have four or five options at a certain position or looking for a certain stat that you're trying to stream, you can convince yourself that, listen, I don't need to spend $90 on this one guy. I can put in a bid of $40 for all five of them, and I'll get the one that I want, and I'll save $50 of FAB, be able to use next week or to use it on that two-star pitcher. Because here's the thing. There are only so many two-star pitchers that everybody's going to be targeting. So yep, everybody's going to be spending up. There's only so many guys going into the closer role on a given week that people didn't grab the week before, that everybody, you know, is going to spend $130 on Julian Merriweather. I feel bad beating that horse a little too much every single week, but it's a pretty prominent example that we've all lived through. But then you also have your Tyler Naquins of the world that don't work out in that moment as well. Kevin, do you think that going into 2022, that we've talked about your FAB strategy and how you budget week in, week out, do you think that anything has changed for you going into this season from what you've either taken away from 2021 versus just how you see the player pool working out, or with the, I know you're very confident, I think a lot of people are, but you know, the schedule, not knowing what's going to happen and the rules that might change, the balls that might change, are you planning on changing that up next year, or are you going in with the same FAB kind of mindset?
I'm going in with the same mindset, but I already think we may need a backup plan as well, because everybody talks about this now. We're looking at our pitcher streamers 2 weeks ahead. Everybody started talking about that last year. So are we looking at 3 weeks ahead now? Or should we start looking at, maybe the guy that got roughed up and had a horrible matchup and I have an extra spot and I want to grab him and stash him, not even having any idea what I'm going to do with him for the next week or two. I think it's going to be really interesting, because generally for the past couple of years, I've loved streaming pitchers. I mean, you get blown up once in a while. You got to have a nice base, protect your ratios with, as Nick likes to say, have your four guys you can throw out there every week. They're in your lineup. And then be looking. Because my big thing with streaming pitchers is someone in your league is doing it. So if somebody comes up and has a couple of good starts and sticks, he's not going to be available. The person that was streaming him is already going to have him rostered. So I think to some extent, we do need to be grabbing these guys. And at the opportune time, ideally, is when they have a good matchup coming up. But that's going to, I think it's going to be harder to do than it has been in the past with pretty much everybody looking to do the same thing. It is still my plan going in, but that might have to vary off of that a little bit.
You mentioned Nick Pollock talks about having your four core, if you will, your four starters that you draft that you're going to hold on to all year, or you're very confident at least, and you're streaming the other positions, or at least you're ready to. To clarify though, like Nick talks specifically about in this scenario, he's talking 12 teamers. And most of the time he is also, he's talking non-NFBC 12 teamers as well. So Yahoo, CBS, ESPN, et cetera, et cetera, Fantrax even. And I would say that in a good majority of the time, like that's easy to do based on the competition that you might have in your league. Now, if you're in a much more competitive league, and I apologize, I'm not trying to say that every other league outside of NFBC is not competitive, because that's not the case at all. But the format and the roster construction size of the NFBC format definitely is different. And the weekly pickups and the fab oriented part of it is, it makes it a little bit more difficult to stream regularly, even in a 12 teamer, even in the online championship. And so that's something to keep in mind when you are looking at the possibility of, as we say from last year, being gombered in a situation where you're just trying to pick up that two-star guy who you looks like has a great setup. In retrospect, obviously he did not, going into San Francisco. They just weren't the team that we thought they were at the beginning. With that in mind, Michael, you said that you stream hitters most of the time. So like, how does that affect like when you're drafting then? Are you drafting specifically? Are you going heavy hitter? That doesn't make any sense.
Heavy pitchers.
Heavy at the top. Are you hitting heavy on the pitchers at the start of your drafts, knowing that's not an area that you really want to deal with, especially in a deeper league?
Yeah. So in the past, I definitely have for fab leagues. And I think this year I'm probably going to, it's hard with the landscape, but the way the landscape is, I feel pitching is actually very deep this year. But I think I still value them a little more than the general consensus for the season. And yeah, I kind of like basically what Nick says to you guys. I make sure I get a really solid four guys there. I definitely make sure I get an ace. I have no problem taking back-to-back aces around one and two. And I just think, because I just think that the way with hitters are, there's so much platooning happening too, and even more so now at the game, that you can easily find these hitters that could have good weeks based on their pitching matchups and stuff like that. Whereas no matter how much we think we know when it comes to pitching streaming and how much we do it, the blowups are going to happen. You just can't help it. And that will kill you, as opposed to you streaming a hitter and say they don't get a hit. Like, other guys can pick up your average because you have so many more hitters on your team. So yeah, to answer your question, yeah. So I do focus on pitching a lot more, and I make sure I get a really good core. I would say maybe like the last pitcher or two on my team, that's where I'll wait and take the upside there. But otherwise, I'm pretty focused on them.
So when you are determining when you want to stream pitchers, and Kevin, I want to get your take on this as well, but Michael, I'll start with you. What are you looking for? Is it strictly, I can't strictly just be, hey, this guy has two starts, he can put up all the counting stats. Like, what is it that kind of goes to the top of your list of what you're looking for, whether it's matchup, platoon splits, or home away splits, et cetera, et cetera. What's important, what's not important to you?
Yeah, so I look at a lot of things, and over the years, I've changed things as I've gone through the seasons. But I started to learn more so last season, actually throughout the entire year, that I put a little more weight on the actual pitcher as opposed to the opponent. Obviously, opponent matters. I do like to look at the opponent like the last 7 days. They're the typical stuff like WRC plus and how they're doing plate discipline wise and stuff like that. But I really like to look at the pitchers because I find that if a pitcher is all of a sudden starting to pitch really well, they tend to continue to do so. I like to look at a pitcher's K walk percentage, their last three starts, as well as their swing strike percentage. I like to look at their velocity too. So obviously if their velocity is ticking up and they're pitching well, that should continue. I always talk about how Saris has talked about a study that if a pitcher's velocity is up for, I think, three starts in a row, that means it should continue and he should continue to actually have success for several more starts after that. I really lean more heavily on what the pitcher's actually doing opposed to the opponent. But obviously opponent matters. I'm not going to stream. If like the end of last year, like Michael Wacha out of nowhere, like his strikeout rate was going near 30% and he started pitching pretty decently, but it doesn't mean I'm going to stream him against the Dodgers. But if they're facing someone who's towards the bottom or even towards the middle, I still am intrigued by that and I will go towards that pitcher.
That's fair. Kevin, looking at the opponent of the pitchers that you might be streaming, like how much does that weigh into whether or not if you're going up against a team that strikes out a bunch against lefties and you've got a lefty that you're eyeing on the wire, even if they're mediocre, hey, this is a solid matchup. This is a guy who could thrive in this particular situation versus the skills. So basically, are you eyeing situation over skills or skills over situation?
It's a combination, but the very first thing I look at is opponents to see if I'm even interested. Michael said, no matter how good Michael Wacha was going, he's not streaming him against the Dodgers. So I'm going down the list looking at the opponents to see if I'm even interested in looking at skills. And then we talk about it or have been talking about it throughout draft season about updating our ADP screens that we're looking at. You got to do the same thing when you're diving into those opponents. Like Michael said, he looks back at the past 7 days or so. We get narratives in our head and they change pretty quickly without us realizing that they have changed. All of a sudden, teams start taking more pitches, stop striking out as much, and we don't realize it. There was quite a period last season where Detroit was the highest scoring team in baseball mm-hmm. for well over a month. And I got into that, and I was still talking about that because I thought that had been under noticed. Then they tanked. I was still talking about them being one of the highest scoring teams in baseball when you were sorting over the past month. They still were, but over the previous week, they'd scored like 3 runs in 6 games. So that's another thing we really got to pay attention to. Something else I started adding last season is weather. Trying to look ahead at the weather for some of these matchups, especially the guys that are pitching where there's retractable roofs. The stadiums play completely different. And we don't know for sure what the team is going to decide with whether that roof's going to be open or shut, but we can get a general idea and a decent guess, and the ballparks play completely different.
Or even like wind with Wrigley, if it's going out, that's scary. But also to touch on what Kevin just said, I remember there was a point last season where the Astros were horrendous for 2 weeks. And I actually streamed against them and it worked. You're right when like we always just have this notion in our head that this offense is amazing or vice versa. And it could not be the case as of late. And sometimes these things happen. You can't explain it. Like the best offenses in the league will go cold. It'll happen no matter what. And if you can take advantage of that when others aren't thinking to look at that for even just a week, then that puts you ahead of everybody else.
And then, Michael, last question before we get into some actual player discussion. We talk, the majority of the conversation usually revolves around streaming starters, whether you have a 2-start pitcher or whatnot. We saw a lot of conversation last year, us included, talking about the value of finding the right middle reliever or just relievers in general that at the very least chip away at your ratios without necessarily hurting you on like strikeouts, and maybe they walk back themselves into a win. What do you have a specific take on that, whether that was a one season fad because of the shortened season the prior and maybe middle relievers getting a little bit more run last year and then maybe evening it out going into 2022? Or do you think that that's something that we're going to see long term?
Yeah, I think it's definitely long term, especially with the way these teams are handling these starters. And you're going to see guys who get a ton of wins, like Brent Suter and stuff like that, which are definitely become valuable. And like you said, help your ratios. And I think it's something that's really needs to be looked into a lot more. And it's actually something at SB Streamer we plan to do throughout the season, because that's going to become a very viable strategy where if you don't want to throw out one of your starters because of their bad matchups, but if you have a good middle reliever who could potentially get you a win or two throughout the week, like that can really help you succeed within the fantasy season. I think that's going to stick, and it might even become more of a thing as the years go on if these teams keep doing what they're doing with these starters.
Yeah, I think we talked about it a lot last year. One of them that, like, one of the things, at least I mentioned a couple of times, look at the usage of those relievers. Like Colin McHugh was a target of mine throughout the course of the season. And if, you know, he didn't pitch the weekend, he has a good chance of pitching two, maybe even three times throughout the course of the next week. So he'd be a good target. And of course, there was one time I was really harking on that and he didn't start at all that week. He didn't pitch at all. It was like, it was in August, Kevin.
That's weird. August,
yeah. Even September. I was like, what? And there was no news on it. Nothing was going on. And then finally, I think he either pitched that.
Was there a lot of blowouts maybe?
No, it was like, didn't seem like there was any kind of pattern to why. I think it turned out to be, not that he was injured per se, but he was still nursing something. And it just wasn't, there was no need to push him. It's Tampa and it's late in the season. They felt pretty comfortable. But yeah, as a general rule, you want to make sure that you're looking at the usage of of the pitchers that you're looking at bringing in to get as many innings pitched, especially in these relievers, which obviously their K rates and at least their, you know, K per nines can add up quickly through if they have enough outings in a given week. Kevin, do you think that this is something that you'll be continuing to talk about throughout the course of the season, or do you think that the usage for 2021 is going to be much different?
No, absolutely. I think I agree with Michael. I think it may even become more of a thing. It's been, gosh, close to 15 years ago now when Bill James wrote his article saying that we have been steadily moving towards this for 100 years. This is not new. This isn't like new since this isn't brand new. It was different in the 70s than it was in the 50s, and people just didn't realize it. For 100 years, we've been moving towards the fact that pitchers are going to pitch three innings every 3 days. That's what we're looking for, towards starters. That's what's going to happen. So these relievers are a bigger deal than we even realize, as much as we saw it last season. And especially with some setup guys and with a favorable matchup and a heavy week coming up, they're gonna get some outings. They may get a win and a save in a 7-game week, so it's something I'm definitely paying attention to even more so this season.
All right, great. Let's talk about some players, some actual pitchers. We didn't talk enough about pitchers in the first segment, so we'll move on to a complete pitcher heavy segment as I debuted it last week. It's called Ask Avoid Stream Keep. So guys, I put together a couple of trios pitchers that are going at relatively similar or same, really, in some of these cases, ADPs. And I'm using NFBC 50. So these are 12 teamers in the last month. So there's about 49 drafts. So plenty of sample size here. So what I want you guys to do, and I'll go back and forth with you guys with each of these threesomes. And of course, if you want to get your take on the other one, by all means, jump in. But I'll go from all the way from ADP 250 all the way down to 350. And then I've got a kind of a wild card group as well to go in here. So, Michael, I'm going to start with you. So of these three, you have to pick one of these pitchers that you are going to avoid all season long. No matter how good they look, you have to avoid them. One of them you can stream throughout the course of the season as long as they are available on your league's wire. And then one of them you have to keep on your roster. You can't drop them. At minimum, you can put them into your reserve. You can skip a start here or there. But for the most part, you have to keep. They're going to be taking up a roster spot on your team all year round. So this is ADP 250, right around there. We have Steven Matz in his new home, Alex Cobb, of course, in San Francisco now, and then Cal Quantrill. still pitching in Cleveland. Where are you placing each one of these guys?
Quantrill, I'm going to avoid completely just because I don't really believe in his skill set and he doesn't have overwhelming stuff. Between Matz and Cobb is tough. If I had to keep someone for the entire year, I'm going to lean on Matz just because I think he's going to get more innings. And I really do like where he went. It makes total sense. Cobb, I guess I'll stream just because, again, I like Cobb more than Matz, I think, just because I really like Cobb's splitter. Obviously, he's going to San Francisco. They know how to unlock these pitchers' potential. I really think he's going to have a fantastic season, but I'm only not keeping him just because of the innings.
Yeah, it's fair. I think I would consider keeping Cobb as well because I don't think I'll be able to stream him. I don't think he'll be available on a regular
basis.
Definitely
not.
Even in a shallower league, I think somebody's going to be continuously taking the chance on him over the course of like weeks at a time and not so much start by start. Kevin, do you have a differing opinion on any of these guys?
No, I agree 100%. I'm kind of surprised because I thought it was going to be, I was kind of surprised at myself that when I chose that Quantrill would be the guy I wouldn't use all season, but it's nice to get a little confirmation bias with Michael Legrian.
Yeah, I think I do the echo what I said about Cobb and with Matz. He's going to be the guy that's like constantly being put on the wire because he's the boring inning eater, like you said, Michael. He will be available to stream, especially in a shallower league, a 10 or even 12 teamer. I know he was on my wire for a good chunk of the season last year in most of my 12 teamers. That might change this year in St. Louis, and I get it, but we'll see where that goes. All right, Kevin, I'll let you lead off with the ADP 275. We have Josiah Gray in Washington, Casey Mize in Detroit, and of course, and then Bailey Ober as well. Three young guys going around the same spot in ADP just before the 300 mark at 275-ish. Which direction do you go with these three guys?
I looked at this one for quite a while, and I surprising myself again, just I feel like it, as great of a prospect as he is, that we know the least about Josiah Gray. So he's the guy I'm not going to use if that has to be one of my choices here. And then with Casey Mize and Bailey Ober, it is really close. Mize had more innings and was pitching really well. He'd lost some time at the end of the year. Still had 150 innings. That was surprising me. Didn't realize that after missing time, he had still got 150 innings in. But he's going to be my streamer because I'm going to hold Bailey Ober. I like the strikeout potential.
I'm going to use the, if I had a soundboard, I would use the boo this man soundboard on you for not rostering Josiah Gray all season long. That man is going to pitch very well. At least he has to, because I roster him in 80% of my leagues. So Michael, give me some insight here and tell me that you're going to do something different with Josiah.
Yeah, so I'm going to avoid Mize here just because I think he's limited with I like to lean more towards strikeout potential pitchers. So I'm going to avoid Mize. Ober's weird to me because I've watched him a ton and he doesn't seem very overwhelming to me. I think he's more of a deceptive pitcher than anything. So I'm just going to do stream there, and I would keep Josiah Gray just because of those breaking balls and just hope that the fastball hits and then he's going to take off.
A very silly narrative. A couple weeks ago, he tweeted out something that was just like, it was either a pitching ninja GIF breakdown or something. And he's just, hey, there'll be more. And he said, more punchies coming next year. And I'm hoping punchies just short for punch outs, aka strikeouts, sure. Which we'll be very happy to see. love it when players go out of their way to tell us what they plan on doing, whether or not it's true or not. We'll find out, but fun to read, especially when you're this starved for any kind of tidbits of information coming from players or teams at this stage of the offseason. All right, Michael, we'll lead off here at ADP 300. We've got three more guys here. Two of them more or less in a similar situation coming back from injury, and another one that's seems to be some people's darling, or at least late round darling. So list them off here. Jameson Taillon, Eric Lauer, and then Carlos Carrasco. I'm hoping that this was a little bit more of a difficult one, even at least out of the two left over, but just go ahead and take it away.
Yeah, this was super difficult for me. Eric Lauer, everyone's liking because he upped the fastball velocity, plus he had a pitch mischange and looked pretty good. But I feel like you have to avoid him compared to the other two just because of upside. As a Mets fan, I really want to pick Carrasco, but I'm going to have to leave him as the streamer. I think he's a little more injury prone than Tyon. I know Tyon might not start the season, but I think he was really starting to get into his groove at the end of last year. His fastball started looking amazing at times, like one of the better fastballs in the league. So I think I would lean Tyon here, but it's very close for me.
It's interesting because you went the very opposite route than you did with Steven Matz, Alex Cobb. Where Lauer is obviously the safest of the three, right? As far as like injury related instances of missing time and or assuming he has that fifth or fourth spot in the rotation, where Tyon, as you mentioned, may not even start the season. Carrasco, who knows what's going to happen in spring training? He might, slip on a step or something like that. And something get an ear infection for all I know. And it's the Mets. Sorry.
That's my exact thinking.
Yeah. So Kevin, are you looking at this in a different direction or are you looking at it the same way as Michael, where you're able to take that risk?
Slightly different. Like what you said with Alex Cobb, if Carrasco's healthy, he's not going to be available to stream. If he's healthy, he's going to be pitching well. So I would have to, if I am considering him for these three categories, I think I'm going to gamble on his health and he's going to be my season long starter.
Those are the rules, Kevin. All right. My fictional game that I made up.
So it's like you said with Alex Cobb, he won't be available to stream. So I can't use him in that slot.
All right. Well, let's move on. We'll go a little bit further down in ADP. We have 325 right around there, at least. Kevin, I'll start with you. Eliza Hernandez, Zach Plesac, and Adbert, three guys that you don't necessarily know if Hernandez is going to still be in Miami, if he has a rotation spot. Alzolay, I think the Cubs even came out and said that they don't plan on utilizing him in a full starter role to at least to start the season, but who's to say what happens after spring training? How are you looking at these three guys?
Yeah, as much, he's probably my least favorite of the three pitchers, but the only one I'm sure right now that I think has a spot in a rotation is Zach Plesac. So he's my starter. As much as I like Adbert Alzolay, he by default, I won't be using him and I will stream Eliza Hernandez. I really like Hernandez. I really like what he did towards the end of the season. I think he had a 1.4 ERA over his last three or four starts late in the year. The Marlins ballpark, of course, what they've done with their entire staff. So I can't leave him out completely. But with the question marks with both him and Alzolay, I got to go with Plesac as leave him in my lineup all season.
Yeah, at this stage in draft season, I might be tempted to keep Eliza just because I'm crossing my fingers that he goes the same way as Zach Thompson. He gets traded to a team that has a clear opening in the rotation. Miami obviously has a logjam. And I know the adage, you can never have too many starting pitching. Look at what everybody said about the Dodgers last year. Yada. I know I hear all that, but there's a different situation, I think, in Miami than there was with LA last year in the fact that they just have so many young, talented arms.
They need to
get into the rotation and get that experience. You might want to move on from Hernandez and give somebody else that opportunity. Michael, do you see a different route for this threesome?
Yeah, Alzolay, I would avoid. I think I would keep Eliza as well. I just think that slider is just stupid good. And I think that what Kevin said is they really know how to develop their pitchers. And I think that he could be really good moving forward. And then I would just stream Plesac. Yeah, he's probably definitely going to get you the innings. And that is somewhat enticing, but I just feel like he's just a lost cause.
And to be fair,
he's in his head.
yeah. And Eliza probably has a rotation spot in Miami if he doesn't get traded, at least to start the season.
I think he will. Yeah.
All right. Let's see. Michael, we'll go a little bit deeper. We got two more threesomes here. We got ADP 350. We have Tyon Walker, Kyle Gibson, and Chris Flexen. Like I said, these guys are all going at the very end of a typical 12-team Fab League, 30 rounds thereabouts, going right in the reserve round picks of your NFBC 50s and your draft and holds and what have you. So again, Taijuan Walker, Kyle Gibson, Chris Flexen going around ADP 350. What buckets are you putting these guys in?
Yeah, this is hard, like in a vacuum without knowing who else you have, because Walker's obviously the most risky. I do think that, again, I'm a Mets fan, so I watch him a lot. I feel like he just got tired. He hadn't really pitched a lot, and he just got to a certain point where he was just gassed and couldn't perform. And I think he still has a lot of talent there. I would take a shot, and I think I would keep Walker, and then I would probably stream Flexen and avoid Gibson, just because I don't know. I can't do it with Gibson. Ground ball pitcher, bad defense behind him. I can't do it.
Yeah, it's probably not going to get better unless they make some drastic.
Yeah, and I feel like that was literally the worst place he could have gone. And I was shocked when the Phillies acquired him. It made zero sense to me.
You have no idea what their infield is actually going to look like, whether Brayson Stock comes up and moves into the shortstop position or the does something and holds on to it. Alec Baum can't really play third base or the infield in general. Sorry, Alec Baum. But yeah, I think Flexen in my mind is the right stream here, just because I think he's going to be readily available. He just has the boring streaming name. I don't know what it is. He's
good flexible. For matchup play. Yeah.
And nobody's going to feel, you know, that bad dropping him. And so he'll be on your wire again and again. Kevin, do you see a different direction for any of these guys?
Nope. I agree with everything you guys have said there.
All right. Well, too I will easy. I'll give you the starting point on the wild card group, my favorite group here. So these guys are all going at different ADPs, but the theme here is that all their roles are completely uncertain. You might think that you have an idea of what's going to happen, but there's definitely no guarantee. First is Aaron Ashby of Milwaukee. I don't think anybody would be surprised if he does not start, does not get a rotation spot, and equally not surprised if he busts out through spring training and they give him some form of a rotation spot. Christian Javier, who could be argued to say he either is the fifth person in the rotation or the eighth person in the Houston rotation. And then Andrew Heaney, another quote unquote next year's Robbie Ray in L, who admittedly signed really early with the Dodgers because he wanted to be able to play. He wanted to be able to spend as much time with his new team as possible. And then 3 weeks later, immediately got locked out and probably it wasn't able to spend any time with his new team. So that worked out nicely for him. Kevin, I'll lead it off with you. What bucket are you putting these three guys in? And don't make me hit the sound effect.
Not only are you going to have to hit the sound effect, I hope our friend Jordan White isn't listening. Maybe he's on a bathroom break, because I hope he is listening to the show. But yeah, Aaron Ashby, I think he has the biggest question mark for a role. So he's the guy I can't use in this scenario. And now I'm going to be a hypocrite and say the guy that I'm keeping is Christian Javier. He's got questions as well, but I think most of the projections have him for about what he did last year, roughly 100 innings pitched with 10 or 11 starts and then another 30 relief appearances. And I think that is worst case scenario. I think depending on performance and how the rest of the rotation works out, that can only go up. And Andrew Heaney's like the ultimate streamer. I think it's going to be really interesting to see if the Dodger coaching staff and development staff can help him keep the ball in the ballpark. If he does, I'll wish I had flip-flopped these two here and wish I had him in my lineup all season. But until we see that, he's definitely my streamer. And yeah, by process of elimination, unfortunately, sorry, all the Aaron Ashby fans out there. And we have a lot of them on Pitcher List and in the Discord. So
listen, yeah, I get it. I'll go into a small rant after I hear Michael's thoughts on this, but Heaney would probably be the one that I would avoid. And again, it has more to do with the fact that if Heaney comes out of the gate actually showing changes, showing that he can control the strike zone and what have you, for whatever reason, that change, he's not giving up home runs. I don't know. Miracles do happen, right? Somebody's going to pick him up and they're going to hold on to him for a long period of time. Somebody who's been an Andrew Heaney believer for years and years is going to be like, finally, I can't believe nobody drafted this guy. I'm going to pick him up and I'm not going to let him go. So I think that would be my only thought on Heaney. But honestly, I'm like, I'm drafting and holding on to all three of these guys. So this would have been really difficult for me to go. Michael, I'm going to get your thoughts on it first.
Yeah, I'm avoiding Heaney. I can't with that guy. His underlying metrics every single offseason look fantastic, but he can never do it ever. Plus, he's an injury risk. I won't even look at him. I would stream Javier. The problem with him is I really don't see how he gets in that rotation. I just don't see it. They got Verlander, McCullers, Valdez, Luis Garcia, Urquidy, and then they still have Odorizzi. I don't know. I don't see how he gets enough innings. Ashby, I think, so if I remember correctly, I think they did with Woodruff what they're doing with Ashby, and they're starting him with a couple innings, and I don't know. I just really feel like they're going to be forced to work Ashby into the rotation. I do what Lauer's doing, but I don't know if he could keep it up. So I think Ashby's going to force his way in there, and I think he's going to get more innings than Javier.
Yeah, the thing for Ashby, even more so than Javier for me, is it's just all about the strikeouts. And even in a relief role, like, he still racks up like an insane amount of strikeouts throughout the course of a week, whether it's four innings and four strikeouts, or I'm looking at his game, like three innings and five strikeouts. So like, these all add up to a full start in a course of a week. And you might not get 10 strikeouts out of him if he starts the whole game, but if he does two appearances at three innings apiece, he gets those double digit strikeouts on the week without damaging your ratios at all. And of course, in this day and age, as we just talked about earlier in the episode, he can back himself into those wins easily, especially on a Milwaukee team that's going to continuously put up runs in that ballpark. Of course, he has to pitch in that ballpark as well, but that's not the point I'm trying to make here. And that's another reason that I've been very vocal. I've drafted Ashby everywhere, and where I haven't,
except
I've been
one spot.
Two now?
Yeah.
Goodness. So, of course, the hoopla, at least personally, was that Jordan White was in one of our listener leagues and he drafted him over me. Now, this was also my 10th draft of the season. So I specifically went into this draft saying, I'm going to only draft players that I have not drafted yet this offseason. That's my first, my YOLO team, if you will. And I got all the way to, I think, round like 22 or 23 without doing it. I was pretty proud of myself. But of course, that included Ashby. So Jordan got Ashby there, but it threw me off so much that in the triple play, somebody sniped me on Ashby because I was just so dumbfounded. I didn't know what to do with myself. So I've got, of the 11 drafts I've finished, I've got them in 9 spots. So that's still pretty good. That's about the same ratio Robbie Ray last year. So I feel good about that.
Nice. One word of caution for those that are rostering Andrew Heaney, because his ADP in online championships is about 20th round right now. So he's being drafted, and his first start is at home against Colorado on the road. Be careful of that. Colorado is going to be going directly from, assuming everything as scheduled, delayed.
Let's go with that. I like the optimism.
Yeah, they will be heading from Arizona to Los Angeles. They won't have spent any time in Colorado. You're not going to have that same effect that we try to take advantage of throughout the season.
Yeah, I love the optimism. I will say, I think my guess is that we still get 162 games, but I think it gets pushed back and we see a couple doubleheaders throughout the course of the season to make up that time frame, because there were a lot of complaints, from what I understand, of the shortened spring training last year in 2020. And a lot of injuries that came from that shortened spring training and players not being able to ramp up and feel confident, especially in the first couple of weeks of the season, pitchers specifically. So that's my guess. We'll see what happens throughout the course of this week. Hopefully by the time you're listening to this, we have some actual clarity and we don't have to listen to Jim Bowden spout off ridiculous comments on Twitter. All right, Kevin, I'll let you echo anything else you want to say regarding any draft strategy advice that people might have, whether they're going into fab leagues or still holding on to the best balls, as you mentioned, we're doing Raz Slam right now, and that's the cut line style, or any other draft strategy advice you might have for everybody.
A couple of quick things we've talked about before, we'll talk about again. It's always good to be reminded. One, especially when we're talking streamers, don't look back. You can learn things when it doesn't work out, but don't dwell on it all season. If you avoided Austin Gomber the rest of the season after, as I say, we got San Francisco'd rather than got Gombered, then you missed out on some opportunities. He had some really nice outings the rest of the season. So you can learn, oh, I should have noticed this and didn't. Like, I should have noticed the Giants are actually really good, especially against lefties in that situation. But don't let it deter you too much. And the other thing, we bring it up all the time, format. And there is, you just said it. You brought up Raz Slam. Check scoring systems. Check that type of thing. And I've participated in other best ball drafts this season and would not even consider a reliever early in a draft. I ran ATC projections with the cut line scoring system, and Josh Hader ranked as the third best pitcher on the board. So that's not something I would even consider in other best ball leagues I've done, but you got to check the format in everything you do.
Yeah, that's solid advice. Michael, I think that you, I know Nick does as well, and I'm pretty sure you echo this. It's the long game, right? When you are streaming pitchers, it is the long game. It's not the week by week or even day by day results that you're getting when you're streaming pitchers. You have to look at what it's going to do for your overall bottom line at the end of the season, especially in a roto format. Obviously, head to head, it's a little different. Obviously, you want to win that week, but in a roto, you're looking at the long game.
Yeah, absolutely. And especially in the beginning of the season when there's always these pitchers coming off the waiver wire that end up being like aces almost. And even in some shallow leagues, Robbie Ray was out there. But a lot of Logan Webb was out there too. Just so many pitchers. Yeah, early on, more bad pitchers that look like they're making some kind of substantial change and hope that it hits and hold on to them and see what happens.
All right. Awesome. Michael, thanks so much for coming on and playing my silly game with me. Could you remind everybody how they can listen to you, where they can follow your work? And if you have anything big, like you mentioned at SB Streamer, doing the reliever tracker and middle relief tracker that they should be keeping an eye out for.
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at SP Streamer. You can check our website, spstreamer.com, too. Yeah, we have a lot of interesting ideas coming for in season. I don't want to tell them all, though. But yeah. But as for me, actually, on SP Streamer, in this podcast will be out when it's out already. But I have an article coming out because I feel like we focus too much as an industry on the early rounds. Like, everyone talks about the first round 24/7 for no reason, where I feel like this game is really won in the middle to late rounds. I took a lot of pitchers that are going in that range and made the spreadsheet. I'm talking about who interests me and stuff. And I think I'm calling it best of the worst pitching starting pitchers or something nice. Like that. But yeah, that will be out actually by the time this is released. So you could check that out if you want.
Yeah, and then SB Streamer has an elite membership that people can, you want to let everybody know about that and why they should be, because we mentioned the Pitcherless Discord. You guys have a pretty strong Discord along with that as well.
Yeah, I'm like the worst self-promoter on the planet, so I'm so bad. My co-host of my podcast, Lauren Auerbach, she's like a million times better at it than I am. But yeah, so we do have a membership. We also have a Discord. We do a lot of really cool, interesting things. And there's some extra articles go into that too and stuff. Definitely, you could check all that out as well. The info is on our website. And we actually did release a draft kit too. It's $5, over 100,000 words, over 60 pages, a draft strategy section that's 70 pages, which doesn't make sense. I mean, 40 pages, sorry. But yeah, there's a lot of good stuff in there too. It's only $5. So.
Yeah, exactly. For the price of a cup of coffee type of thing. It's amazing that you're able to put out such a large amount of content and quality content at that kind of a price point. And everybody would be silly not to utilize that. Even on top of any other draft kits that you might have already purchased or plan on purchasing, this is something you should definitely be keeping an eye on. What I think is actually great about what I see all the time, Michael, from your community, is that you always have somebody who's willing to like pay for or buy like your elite memberships, and all of a sudden I'll see you tweeting out, hey, we had two people, you know, randomly buy extra memberships, so we're giving them away. So if you're not following Michael at the very least on Twitter, one, you're probably doing it wrong, but you should start at SP Streamer and keep a lookout for more of the very generous members of that SP Streamer community as well.
Yeah, they're really, it's, I'm like so blessed to have what I have because a lot of the members just love what we do and love the community. And yeah, that it happens a lot. It happens really often, which is great because then I could get more people exposed to this kind of stuff. And a lot of people out there, I think, are afraid to pay for stuff like that too. And they don't know what they're getting, or they don't think that they're, I guess, advanced enough to that level to even be willing to get into that stuff. So I think it's a good opportunity to get those people into these things.
So definitely keep an eye out for that. As for us, that's going to do it for episode 48 of On the Wire. Please make sure to subscribe, share, and review the podcast wherever you are listening, even if your review is just a general tweet out into the ether and not a specific platform. It still goes a long way to let us know what you think of the show and lets others know about how much fun our new segment is as well. Make sure you are listening to all the great podcasts over at Pitcher List Podcast Network by following both the Pitcher List Pods on Twitter at Pitcher List Pods for updates and subscribing to both the Pitcher List Fantasy Baseball Podcast feed and the Pitcher List General Baseball Podcast feed as well for our non-fantasy related baseball pods. You can follow myself on the Twitter at 80 grade. It's all spelled out. Kevin is, of course, at Hasting Kevin. And once again, thank you, Michael Simeone, for joining us at SP Streamer. On behalf of Kevin Hasting, I am Adam Howe. And with that, we bid you goodbye.